Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, January 28th, 2015. And with me today, I have my financial advisors. And also...
You're in trouble, man. At least half of us.
Well, and I also have Dave Hamilton.
Sell low, buy high. That's right. Sell low, buy high.
Good.
From
good
me. To know. From me.
Oh, right, right. Okay, I'm writing that down. From Dave. So, got it.
Yeah, Dave's financial advice has been, for other people, has been very excellent for Dave over the years.
As well, it should be.
Now that we've got that out of the way, now people know how to listen to this show.
Exactly.
Right, right. Okay, so the other voice you're hearing is Brian Chaffin. And it's hey, nice Jeff. To have you here too, Brian.
Thank you kindly.
Yeah. And now that we know that all of our financial transactions need to be designed to benefit Dave, it's going to make things so much easier moving forward. Yeah. So yesterday, speaking of finances, was Apple's first quarter earnings conference call.
Yes.
And they had some big numbers.
They had some big numbers. A lot of iPhones sold. 74.5 million iPhones, right?
Which is nicely above the 69 million that analysts were predicting.
Yeah, it's just so many iPhones.
Yo, even 69 million is like a metric buttload.
Yeah, that's right. The 74.5 would officially be a crap ton.
Yes, that's right.
It's a stunning achievement. You know, Apple makes logistics at this point look so easy that we just come to expect it. You know, it used to be that when Apple would announce a product, there would be just these immense shortages and, you know, take Apple forever to catch up. And Apple still has very tight constraints when it releases new iPhones in particular. But in general, Apple has just made it look so easy that we forget about what a monumental job that company is doing.
That's true. And even with the constraints that we see, say, like when the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus launched, I have to imagine some of that is related to limitations in physics, where it's just not possible to produce any more, any faster than they do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And the difference between producing 74.5 million iPhones and, say, Samsung producing, you know, 150 million or however many jillions of feature phones and low-end Android devices that company ships, the difference is it's night and day. You know, from Apple's tolerances to the high quality of the components that Apple needs to just every single aspect that goes into these to manufacturing, it's a job that is on a completely different level from what other companies are shipping in volume.
They have a CEO who's a master at this.
It's true, but I think that Tim Cook's a lieutenant for this, the current operations guy.
Yeah,
I think he's also quite studly.
I agree. Yeah. No, it is. There is a flip side to this, right? That we now have a company that is being run as an operations company first,
yes.
Right? And what does that mean 5 years from now, 10 years from now? It could be fine, but that's not the Apple we have known. And again, that change is a guarantee. Whether change is good or not, who knows? But right now, it's good.
Yeah, Apple wasn't always the same Apple under Steve Jobs.
That's absolutely correct. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But it is worth noting that this is a shift in.
But you know, Dave, is it a shift in priority, or is it a shift in? I don't even know. I don't know that it's a shift in priority. I guess is what I'm trying to say. I don't think that operations are being put above the other things.
It's a shift in personality for the company.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sure. I'm not passing judgment here. I think it's too soon to pass judgment, but
But you know, Dave,
but I'm saying it's a notable thing, and perhaps I'm taking us down a tangent that's not good for this discussion today, but perhaps it is.
I don't know. I think it's fantastic, but I think that if Tim Cook was still Steve Jobs' lieutenant, and you know, Tim Cook was just the operations guy, the operations guy, Steve the visionary, I think that we would probably still be at a similar level of operational performance today.
I totally agree.
I mean, these things. It's Apple has been steadily chipping away at making its operations ever better. I mean, Apple has been best in class at a lot of aspects of operations for shortly after Tim Cook came to Apple.
That's right.
But you know, it just took time to scale up to what we see Apple today, and I think that still would have happened with you know, if Steve hadn't gotten sick.
I totally agree. And I think that's why Steve tapped him to be his successor, because he knew that this was an important thing for Apple's future. Now, is it the most important thing for Apple's 20-year future? I don't know, but it's certainly the most important thing for Apple's 5-year future.
Well, for what's sure. most important for Apple in the long term is always a moving goal, because
that's true.
Things are changing. So looking at what's best for their 5-year future and saying, is that the best for their 20-year future? Maybe they will be the same thing, but if we're trying to figure out what their 20-year needs are today, we're probably going to be wrong, at least on some level, because we know it's a moving target all the time.
Well, let me say it perhaps more succinctly. The only person that has consistently known what is best for Apple, as history has proven to us, is Steve Jobs. So the question is, who gets to make that decision going forward? Right now, that's Tim Cook, and along with the board, obviously.
Mm. Yeah, but Tim rules that board, I think, right now.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. So it's Tim, right?
Yeah. Tim is firmly in charge of Apple.
Right. Does he have the vision? I'm not saying product visionary, but does he have the corporate vision to pick what the right next most important priority is for Apple? Because right now we're still running under Steve Jobs' corporate vision.
I don't think that's the case.
I think we're in a transition right now.
I know where you're going, Brian. I mean, it certainly the way certain, like the PR department has exhibited some externally visible changes, and there's some differences there for sure. Not all of them positive, right? I mean, we hear from people inside Apple, and some things have changed for the better, and some things have changed dramatically for the worse. That's to be expected. I don't, you know, count either side of that as, oh my God, it's great. Oh my God, it's horrible. Right. But we're still running under the plan that Steve set up, and now people are, but like you said, people are starting to tweak it. And where does that go? Right. And it's just interesting. Again, history is the only indicator we have. And what's been proven time and again is that when Steve Jobs is not running Apple, it falters.
But Steve said that he spent the last few years of his life making sure that Apple would outlive him.
Right.
So by your very logic, the choices that Steve made about what was going to happen to his company after he died should result in positive results.
But that's, again, to my point, we're still running under this structure, this vision that Steve Jobs had. I don't know. It's not obvious that anyone else's vision has taken precedence yet.
All right. Well, what I think we're going to be seeing long term is Steve Jobs' vision, because he clearly was thinking farther than 5 years out.
Absolutely.
But through Tim Cook's perspective.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have right now. The question is, where is Apple in 5 years? Yeah, I'm not, this is it though.
I think that, I mean, like, I don't think this idea of hiring folks from the fashion industry, I don't think that was Steve's plan. I think that's Tim's plan.
Sure, yeah, but that still can fall within the vision that Steve had. It's just Tim's implementation.
Yeah, but I don't think that was Steve. That's what I'm saying. I don't think that was Steve's vision.
Yeah,
I think that is right. Tim Cook bringing his perspective on the best place to take Apple in the future, and that's why he was chosen, which is one of your earlier points in this conversation, Dave.
Yep. Yeah, this is the first time we've had a CEO picked by Steve Jobs that wasn't Steve. Well, not the first time.
This is the first time it appears to have worked out well.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, it's because in the past, every single time Steve Jobs was picking out a CEO, he's picking out somebody he could manipulate.
He could control, and that was not the goal here. Right. This was the first time he actually picked a CEO, as opposed to someone that can deal with things while I go play.
Yes.
And he also. And this was also the first time he left the company where it was on his terms.
That point could be argued. There were external factors, but
he was in a position where he could gracefully transition out, and he could plan for a time when he wasn't there. Yeah. Previously, it was pretty much just, you're out, goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So
we can move on. We've hashed this point enough.
Can we talk about the secrecy aspect?
Sure.
It occurred to me, and this was after Kelly was like hammering on me in the towers about changes to what Apple's reporting, and it occurred to me that Apple is dramatically pulling back what it reports to Wall Street, and that's the thing that Kelly was pointing out. But what really occurred to me is that it puts a completely different spin on Tim Cook telling us on the stage. I think it was D10, right, where he said that he was doubling down on secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it turns out that applies to Wall Street too.
Right,
and I find it's very, very interesting. I mean, Apple's always been very, very straightforward in what it reports, and it's not that Apple is not being straightforward in what it reports to Wall Street, but they're reporting a lot less, and that really allows Apple to control its own narrative on Wall Street more than it ever has in the past.
And we know how much Apple loves to control the narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, now that they're in a position where they can, they will.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's definitely fascinating to see.
Now, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a financial advisor about this, and he pointed out to me that this could well be part of Apple's personal plan to focus less on the quarter. You know, quarterly reporting has been very, very good for transparency's sake in corporate America, but it's been horrible for long-term development for a lot of companies.
And I'm assuming, considering I'm not a financial wizard, that the problem comes in where companies have to focus so much on what's happening the next quarter that they lose the vision for the long term.
Yeah, a lot of decisions get made for all the wrong reasons. You know, it used to be a big thing to do channel stuffing. Apple used to do channel stuffing. You know, so you make your quarterly numbers, and but you know, what are you going to do next quarter? Now your channel's stuffed. So I mean, a lot of R&D has suffered in corporate America because of the focus on short-term profits and quarter results and whatnot. And there's been a bit of a reaction against that as some companies are, in fact, trying to take a longer view. Of course, as we were just discussing, Apple has long taken a longer view. But by telling Wall Street less, it does de-emphasize the next quarter a little bit. So it's interesting. It's a really interesting transformation that has been quietly going on with that, how Apple handles Wall Street.
And my guess is that if Apple can get away with sharing even less, they will.
I expect Apple to continue to pull back.
Yeah, and then we'll be... Well, with their finances, will be in the same place we've been with products for a long time.
Yeah, I know. It'll be like sort of coming in sync. The finance department will be coming in sync with the PR department.
Or maybe they'll cross paths.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, no. The streams will be terrible.
Yeah, don't cross the streams.
No, that's next year with the Ghostbusters movie, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Hey, another topic that I wanted to hit before we wrap up today. YouTube announced yesterday that they're dropping Flash as the default video format.
LOL Flash.
Yeah. And I found that to be interesting because if a site as big as YouTube is ready to move on from Flash, then any hopes that Adobe may have been secretly harboring that Flash would make a comeback, they're gone now.
Yeah, Flash should be a forgotten relic within, 6 to 18 months.
I think it's going to take longer than that. And I think the reason it's going to take longer than that, first, is because we haven't seen a whole-scale abandonment of Flash in the porn industry yet. And there Adam Christensen was saying that schools are still relying on Flash a lot for their online curriculum programs. So we have both of those. And we do know that Adobe has refocused where they're marketing Flash. So while I think it is on a very short-term path to obscurity for multimedia, at least like online content, it has a real future in the focused markets that Adobe is going after now, which would be things like multimedia kiosks, where it can be a completely self-contained system.
Yeah.
And I actually think Flash will probably work very well in that type of environment. But it'll be a thing where people no longer are looking at it as Flash. It's just whatever the kiosk is. Like when you go to an ATM, you don't think about what operating system the ATM is running. It's just an ATM.
You don't think about what operating system the ATM is
okay,
running.
Okay, average people don't think about what operating system it's running.
Fair point.
Yeah. I cringe every time I stick my credit card into that Windows machine.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Well, and Flash kiosks that are accessible from the web will still come with lots of vulnerability. Of course, there's actually, what are the bad guys going to get?
Well, I think what Adobe is looking at is Flash as a completely self-contained system, so it wouldn't have internet access.
Oh, sure.
Really?
Yeah.
So I guess if you build
SneakerNet updates to it,
if you build a CPU / GPU that's built, that's optimized for the way Flash does things, that could be an efficient decision. Sure.
Sure. And then you have whatever content is going to be preloaded, and yep. you plug like a memory stick into it that has whatever that content will be, and now your kiosk sits in the front of your office or at the trade show or wherever this is going to be. And it does its thing independently of whatever else is around it.
Oh, God. It just sounds like we're headed towards like Flash OS.
It sounds exactly like that.
And, well, and, of course we
that'll,
are.
That'll be, you know, forget Skynet. Well, it'll be the revolt of the Flash OS machines.
That, I don't know that I would. You may be right, but I wouldn't necessarily say that's the case. I don't know enough about these various and recurrent Flash exploits to say that it's an inherent problem with Flash versus an inherent problem with the way Flash needs to be built to interface with all the various browsers that it needs to use, right? I mean, it needs to be this independent thing. If you're able to build the box around it, I feel like maybe that goes away. I just don't know enough to stand up and say, doesn't matter what you do with Flash, it's always going to be insecure. What we do with it has strong potential to be insecure.
True.
But that's all we know. That's all I know anyway.
Boy, you know, the path from Shockwave to Flash OS is a convoluted and dirty one.
Well,
there's a lot of bodies buried there.
Oh yeah.
And Brian, I find it interesting that you started talking about Flash OS, because I've looked at what Adobe has been doing for years, like decades, as a slow progression to Adobe OS. And that's because if you look at the way the Creative Suite applications are built, when they install at the operating system level. And when they run, they're running as part of the operating system on your computer. So when your computer boots up, if you've installed Creative Suite, you are now running a hybrid operating system that's whatever Apple or Microsoft has made, plus whatever Adobe has made as well. And yeah. And it's been like that for years. And I think that Adobe would love to be able to have the whole package, but they just know that's not practical. And if they could have an Adobe OS that was just their thing, I think they would really jump on it.
Or even a flavor of Windows that is built like an embedded, and you talked about ATMs, right? Those typically don't run off the shelf Windows. Those run an embedded version of Windows. And mm-hmm. So does Flash, is there a way with that pre-existing, they don't have to develop Flash OS, right? Can you marry those two together in a way that actually is secure but still has the flexibility of being connected to the internet and all of that stuff? And my guess is the answer is probably yes.
Yeah, if you're creating a completely controlled environment where the operating system and if they do an Apple thing where they control the operating system and the hardware,
right,
then it would probably be a lot easier to make a secure Flash, which is kind of weird to think of the word secure and Flash being put together.
Hardened Flash.
I like that.
Yeah.
Hardened Flash. All right. We are out of time. So Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Indeed.
It is always great to have both of you on the show. And for all of our listeners, please head on over to the iTunes store and rate the podcast for us, because it's always great to get your feedback. And we will see everyone again tomorrow.